There's a new petition doing the rounds today called The Great Barrington Declaration. It's been signed by 6,000 scientists and doctors from around the world and argues that those who are at minimal risk of death should be able to live their lives normally, build up immunity, and by doing so, protect those who are at risk. It suggests all measures should be focused on protecting the most vulnerable. It, of course, runs counter to the view of England's chief medical officer, chief scientific officer, the NHS, British Medical Association, the World Health Organization, and many public health experts. Professor John Edmonds is an epidemiologist who sits on the government advisory body SAGE.
Local restrictions that have been put in place in much of the north of England really haven't been very effective. You can see rates still going up, very rapidly. And so we need to take much more stringent measures, not just in the north of England, actually. I think we need to do it countrywide.
Well, Sunetra Gupta is Professor of Theoretical Epidemiology at Oxford University's Department of Zoology and signed the Great Barrington Declaration, was one of the, one of the movers and shakers behind it, Professor Gupta. And what you heard Professor Edmonds say there is exactly what you don't want to happen, isn't it?
What do you mean? I mean, I think that I completely agree with John that if you want to stop infection spreading, that you will have to clamp down in some very draconian way. I think the point that we were making is that is not necessary. It is absolutely okay for infections to increase as long as the people who might die from such an event are protected.
Right. So, as I understand it, in order for what you would like to happen, there shouldn't be further restrictions, at least not on the majority of the young population.
No, that's right. What I was, and you put it so well. You laid out exactly what we're saying, absolutely perfect terms. So I almost don't need to say anymore. But what I was trying to stress is that means a radical shift in the way we perceive what is wrong and what needs to be prevented. So if we say, OK, our goal is to prevent infection, then of course John is right and everyone's right. We've got to go and do this, put in place these awful restrictions. And our point is that that's not necessary and it's also not desirable because those restrictions carry with them such enormous costs, especially to the underprivileged and to the children, the disruptions to schools and universities. Mm. I mean, we're really harming a lot of people we really care about.
Is it realistic, though, to think that you can shelter or shield all people over, well, presumably it would be over about the age of 60?
I don't think it would be everyone over the age of 60 by any means. I think that is the important question. That's the question we need to carefully discuss. Now, if you break that question down into parts, who is it that we need to focus upon? I mean, there's some components of it, and large components, which are easy, perhaps, or relatively easy, nothing is easy, to address, such as the protection of care homes and infection control in hospitals, two very large areas in which we failed, and even Sweden, who I think is following the right policy, also, didn't manage to achieve to the right degree. So those are lessons to be learnt, and I'm sure they have been learnt, and that is, I presume, going to go ahead anyway, but that is a very large component of where we should be directing our resources, which, after all, are limited.
Okay, but there are an awful lot of people who are over 60 or over 70 or over 80 who don't live in care homes, and I wonder whether you're just accepting that there is a price to be paid in lives. But it may be less, the price, you could argue, isn't as great as the price that's paid in the different effects on lives without a restrictions.
Well, I mean, at a very basic level, you would say that, but actually what we're proposing is better than that. It's more of a sort of win-win. We're not just saying, as many people have suggested, much to my dismay, that the people who are vulnerable should just be left to die. Absolutely not. We feel that people who are vulnerable, we could focus our attention on shielding them. And remember, this is for a short period of time. This is, let's say, until Christmas or maybe until Easter, until we build up the levels of immunity in the community that we already accept for such diseases as flu. Now, we may have already got there. We don't know. There's a big argument which around, are we already at that, what we call the herd immunity sort of endemic equilibrium threshold? You know, there are many reasons to believe we might be there. Also reasons to query it. But we need to, you know, do a lot more work and research and think carefully about what's going on, analyze the situations before we know where we're at. But in the meantime, what we can do is, again, temporarily work with people who are vulnerable, who have a level of risk, to ascertain their level of risk and then adopt social distancing, isolation measures that are commensurate with that level of risk.
While herd immunity, indeed, while herd immunity is built up amongst everybody else. Yes. Professor Gupta, thank you very much for talking to us.